Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
In the South, it's always college football season, and the king of college football reigns supreme all year long. Now more college football talk with the king of college football. It's the Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
9 states, 60 sticks. Been doing it 10 years. I appreciate the blessing, folks. Chuck Oliver Show, we talk college football. Do it. Year-round playoff game scenario. Here's what somebody's season comes down to. Here's at some point, your season's going to come down to this. We are playing a playoff caliber opponent. We're down six. The opponent has just taken possession. There's 6:37 left. Their number one goal is we don't get the ball back. Can we get a stop? There you go. When it comes to Tennessee, to me, that's what I'm real interested in. Nico and the offense, I think I understand what's going to happen on that side of the ball. They're going to be some version of really good. Whether it's an 83 or an 84 or an 87 or an 89, like out of a, I don't know, but they're going to be some, like, they're going to be a right answer on offense, I promise you. We'll work out the details and we'll see how much of a right answer, but that's going to work. The defense. When we need to kind of dig in, when we need to stop Alabama, for instance, in the fourth quarter and get the ball back, can the opponent run out that final 6:37? We never get the ball back. Can they do that? That, to me, is Tennessee's season. I want to welcome on right now a guy who can answer that question, all of them, when it comes to the balls. Off the hook, it's his own deal, man. It's Dave Hooker. How you doing, man?
Never better, Chuck. How are you?
Oh, nothing but blessed. Tell everybody about Off the Hook. We've known you from ESPN, from the Knoxville News Sentinel, from the Sports Animal. Tell me about Off the Hook. Remind everybody.
Yeah. Just check out offthehooksports.com, offthehooksports.com. We'd love for people to do that. And, you know, we cover Tennessee and we're free. So there's not a lot of people that can say that.
And there's video galore, folks, and it's good stuff over there. So, again, if you're a Tennessee fan or a fan of somebody who's playing Tennessee that week, for instance, that's the place to go. All right, well, let's start on offense. Did I too casually breeze past the 24 season on offense? I was like, it's going to be some version of it's a right answer over there. Drill down on that. Tell me what you expect from Nico, because in the limited regular season time and then the bowl game, I was like, that kid's fabulous.
I think it's fabulous. I've heard nothing but positive reviews on, off the record, quiet whispers, whatever. I'll just be real frank with you. Everything that I've heard about him has been positive. I can't say that that's been the case with some other names that your listeners would know that they thought were, you know, fantastic coaches or players. Well, there was always a little bit of a question mark. There's so far been no question mark about Nico. The way he showed up on campus, had the respect of his teammates because he didn't have the big head, which I know that some people worried about. Perhaps he was a little bit too cocky coming in. And I agree with you. I think it's going to be some version of really good. If Joe Milton's offense last year was C, then I think that it'll be much closer than that 2022 version when it was an A-plus with Hendon Hooker. So it's just how good can they be in year one, I think it's the ultimate question.
I was mentioning all the video on your site. Am I remembering correctly? Did you talk directly with Brew McCoy, or you had somebody on about Brew McCoy and his injury? How is he in the recovery? Like, it's all full steam ahead, right?
Yeah, visit with Brew McCoy at a signing. So we did have an opportunity to visit with him, and Brew is back on the field and running straight ahead. He's not doing a lot of lateral work yet. This was about 10 days ago. So about 13 days ago, I guess, 2 weeks. And then, so he's doing really, really well, and he's key because I don't know that they have a guy that can really dictate coverage and move defenses around on the roster other than him right now. Guys are either too young or are not good enough. But I think Brew McCoy is a special talent. Before the injury, one NFL scout told me that he was the best overall NFL prospect on Tennessee's roster. We'll see if that holds true after the injury and with the emergence of some other players like James Pierce.
James Pierce. Yeah, I was about to say, the guy who swallows quarterbacks. All right, talk Dante Thornton.
That comment was definitely made before last season and Pierce's emergence.
I was talking about him earlier today. I was like, folks, he didn't even start. Dante Thornton, there was a little bit of an injury thing, I think, but there was also just fits and starts, man. It was there. He never got any sort of rhythm. Talk about Dante Thornton for 2024.
I think the interesting thing is, do they have him at the slot receiver like they had Jalin Hyatt? I think they wanted to replicate that, and Hyatt won the Biletnikoff Award in 2022, and that's what they wanted. But Dante Thornton didn't seem comfortable there. So he has big size. You know, he's 6'5". Would you slide him to an outside receiver position? Possible. Tennessee usually settles in one of those positions with their guys, and then you stay there. But he did play a little bit on the outside before getting injured last year, right when he made a great catch. So it looked like he showed up and things were moving a little bit too fast and he wasn't ready. And then about the time he got up to speed, he got injured. So I think there's still a question mark there about how good he can be. But there were times last year I thought he was a complete bust. I'm not of that mindset anymore. I think he'll at least be solid, if not pretty good.
All right. There was a season, and this is not to disparage anybody, it's just about opportunities. There was a season probably, I don't know, 6-7 years ago, Julio Jones had gotten hurt, and so Harry Douglas got a bunch of snaps and turned into a 1,000-yard receiver. What was Squirrel White's production about last year? Because he's a good ball player. Is he lead Tennessee in receiving again, that level of good? Or was that like some based on opportunities?
I think it's part of the offense, too. It relies on the slot a lot. So the slot receiver is the guy who benefits most from this offense. So the idea is oftentimes for the outside receiver in the slot to put the safety, because of tempo and because of good play design, to put them in a bind. So at that point, one of those guys should be open. And I think more times than not, you prefer that be the slot, because the guy on the outside is going to be running further down the field and you don't want to give up the big play. And then safety, I think by nature, is don't let people beat you over the top. So I think that's as much a reflection of the offense as it is anything else. I do love Squirrel White. I think he's very good. Going back to the Thornton question, I think it'll be interesting. Is that Thornton and White's spot at the slot, or is a little bit Thornton at outside, a little bit inside? Or do they just say, like they did in 2022 with Jalin Hyatt, one of you guys are going to get the vast majority of the slot receiver snaps? Yeah. If they do, I would think that would be Squirrel White, but I certainly can't tell you for 100% at this point.
Yeah, credit to him for stepping up. All right, flip it around. James Pierce is going to be awesome. Talk about beyond him. Talk interior. Talk my scenario about it's the fourth quarter, there's 6:37 left, and a team like Alabama last year says, yeah, we don't want you to get the ball anymore. Talk about Tennessee's ability to survive in that scenario and get the ball back, get the stop.
I don't think that's what you want. I don't think that's the way this program is being designed. I think if you find yourself in that situation, that's not good for Tennessee, because by nature they're going to place a greater importance on edge rushers, which in your scenario – whether it's a running game or quick passing game, you're not going to see be a factor as much, those elite edge rushers like Pierce. And then, does Tennessee have the guys in the middle to be able to stop somebody that's just going to run it through A and B gap? I don't know that they do yet. I think they're good there. I don't think they're great. But to answer your question, I don't want to be in that type of position. If I'm the University of Tennessee, I want to be in a position where I've got the lead and I'm able to pressure the quarterback with pass rushers and mixes up of fronts in terms of blitz and stunts. But I don't want to be in that position you described if you're Tennessee. I know you will be, but I don't know that they're there yet to have that interior defensive line depth to be able to withstand Georgia or Alabama that would come right at them later in the game with potentially the lead.
Wrapping up with my man, Dave Hooker, Off the Hook Sports. You can get him online, as he says, real good, and it's free. Talk about the secondary because, man, it was a shooting gallery last year. I mean, big play, big play, big play. And they made some big plays of their own, but that was the big opportunity last year for a lot of opposing offenses. Have they made enough meaningful changes?
They made a lot. Seven guys are gone from a secondary that wasn't very good, and seven either transferred or their eligibility was up. So they're going to go along the lines of being young and being talented. A couple of four-star guys and Ricky Gibson at cornerback and Jordan Matthews at cornerback. I think Gibson's probably the young player to watch there. And then what do they do at safety as well? Because they have to address that position. And in Tennessee's offense, you would say that probably nickelback is more of a defensive back than a linebacker. So let's include him. So they got five people to look for. The other guy that I will tell you I think will be a factor as far as a newcomer is going to be Boo Carter. He is, I believe, going to end up being the starting strong safety at some point this year. And perhaps even sooner than that in the offseason. He is a four-star prospect who I think can return punts and can do incredibly well at that as well. He's out of the Tennessee area. And clearly, Nico is on his own level as far as the prospects that they most coveted. But I would say Boo Carter is on that second level of a bunch of guys that they've targeted since they've been at Tennessee and said he's a gotta-have sort of guy. So Nico's by himself, all alone, number one. But I think Boo is right in that next level of guys that they really, really, really like. So if he doesn't pan out, I think you've got to wonder about talent evaluation at the University of Tennessee, which is a fair question at this point.
Are you referencing two corners that are freshmen starting? Was that what you were saying?
No. I think one will start. I think there's a battle there for – let me clarify too. They would be sophomores, so I think that they were on campus last year. I think some people thought
so. Not Caleb Beasley.
No. Beasley is the true freshman that's going to come in. So Ricky Gibson and Jordan Matthews.
Okay,
would be
all right.
The two
yeah, you were. I was like, all right. Well, start some true freshmen. Who was it? Jonathan Hefney and the other kid way back in the day. I was like, all right, we're going back to
Rashad
the future.
Rashad Baker, is that who you're referencing? Who's still getting drugged by LeBrandon Tofield somewhere in Baton Rouge?
Folks, I actually think the 04, I was like, I'm having flashbacks. I think the 04 season was what started the end of it for Chief, for John Chavis in Knoxville, because he always liked to hang corners out in man coverage and then play games up front. And he had a couple of freshmen hanging on for dear life, and I think it changed him at that point. it was a couple, Jonathan Hefney and whoever the other kid was, and I was like, oh, no, not that again. Dave, I've had a nice little visit today. I appreciate you making some time, man.
Yeah, always. I appreciate you.
All right, we'll talk to you later. Dave Hooker from Off the Hook Sports. I was like, is he not a freshman? No, redshirt freshman. Yeah, sorry about that. So I was like, well, the kid's a four-star and the other kid is a three, so maybe. But that'll be an interesting approach because if you were as poor as Tennessee was in the secondary, giving up big plays, the path to improvement, not often, is a couple of freshmen. And, I mean, I was looking at, like, true freshmen because they got a four and a three. If you have Tyson Campbell coming in or Surtain or Eli Ricks or Stingley or whatever, that's different. Stingley showed up. I was like, is he the best corner in America? That's a five-star kid who everybody was looking at from day one. That's not really the situation Tennessee is in right now in the secondary. So that kind of got my attention there. Appreciate Dave's time. We will take a break. Continue on this Friday next.
More college football talk with the king of college football. It's the Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
Friday on the Chuck Oliver Show, we're going to talk college athletics a decent little bit. Not necessarily college football, but it certainly can apply. And my hand is raised, folks. Full transparency. I think if you listen to the program for any length of time, you know this. I really am I do not keep up with, quote, the industry. I don't know a lot of folks. Like, Heath was up at a industry convention, conference, big giant thing up in New York City the past 3 days. Heath probably knew everybody there. I don't know anybody. Like, so I don't keep up and I don't recognize. There are some very well-known names that I'm not familiar with. So the person I'm about to tell you about, I don't know, but maybe you do. So there's no commentary. It's just I'm unaware. The overall point that I'm going to make is that being treated equally does not guarantee being treated well. If you did not see yesterday, I thought that this was actually just a feature. It's a human, apparently. JR Sport Brief. That's how somebody pitches himself. JR Sport Brief. And he's with CBS Sports Radio. And he had given out a Sports Minute yesterday talking about women's basketball. And if you hadn't seen if you hadn't seen the games, you've been missing some pretty exciting stuff. But if you haven't seen the numbers that have come in, there's a lot of people like maybe you who have been watching at least more women's hoops. So under the banner of congratulating the exciting nature of what's going on in college basketball right now on the women's side, I will say, at the very least, he used some clumsy phrasing for a South Carolina player. More accurately, very limiting, clumsy phrasing. And you can go find out. It's about a girl, Camila Cardoso, I believe her name is. And she's from Brazil. And the way he described her, like I said, clumsy and very limiting, like took all personality and depth of character and all, took all of that out and just like in the way he labeled her. Here's a truth, though. If we pay attention to you in sports, we normally pretty quickly get around to talking about you in a shabby way. It would be great if this type of language and descriptors that we are so casual about just goes away. But a dude in the same sport has been dealing with this for decades. We just don't really even think about it. I mean, I'm a huge Charles Barkley fan. I went to a game in Athens in maybe February of 83, maybe, to watch him play because I'd heard about this round mounder, this fat kid at Auburn. Do you remember there was a picture? It might have been in Sports Illustrated. Folks, Auburn may have done it. Best basketball player maybe they've ever had. And they had a picture of him. I want to say he had on a blue jumpsuit, warm-up suit, and he was in eating pizza. And, like, that was kind of the joke. Round mound of rebound. Now, well, Chuck, that was 40 years ago. It was. I don't know. Did y'all see the story about Heath? Did you see the story Patrick Mahomes had a picture taken with a shirt off and he was not the most defined fella in the world? Did you see that story about a month ago or so?
Yeah. I've seen a couple of pictures of him wearing a little gut. Not big, but little something. Not
did
abs.
You see he was described as Patrick Mahomes?
Yes.
There was a first-round pick from Kentucky, Mel Turpin, Dinner Bell Mel. There was Hot Rod, John Hot Rod Williams. Heath, do you remember the other John Williams?
That would be John Hot Plate Williams.
Hot Plate Williams. The Hick from French Lick. Like, some of this stuff is very pointed and direct and limiting and clumsy. And my point is not, so you got to get used to it. I'm saying, once we start paying attention to you in sports, it's not very long until we start working you towards like a very limited role. I had to KO Spikes on probably 5-6 years ago. Sometime he had a book come out. It was a book of photography. And I said, you know, you're supposed to be this robot on my television on Sunday. You just run around and play football. You realize you're blowing the stereotype. And he laughed. He was like, that's how a lot of people see us. But we do have personalities and depth and whatever. And so that's limiting. So when it comes to names, I all of this started because I had a story about the ratings from women's college basketball that I wanted to get to either yesterday or today. And I'm reading all of this about how we're addressing people. And at the same time, I'm seeing Angel Reese say, call me Bayou Barbie, which the complaint from Dawn Staley, she was said, you limited it to just geography, where she's from, and you limited it to just a description of her physically. You said this from Brazil, and then they described her body. Bayou Barbie? And I think she tried to trademark it. So it's a weird time we live in, folks. I actually texted a buddy of mine out at LSU. I was like, Angel Reese is good with Bayou Barbie. And I got back the thumbs up. I was like, all right. And I know she was. I've seen she talks about it. So it's just, if you're in sports, we will get around to talking about you in a very casual, shabby, limiting way. What's up, Heath?
Well, we appear to have what we needed to by the end of the week, according to folks who are following the college football playoff. Heather Denich, VSPN, reporting that all 10 of the conferences in Notre Dame have agreed to the college football playoff contract. Now, the schools may have agreed, but so far it has not been announced officially by the college football playoff. But again, Denich reporting all 10 conferences in Notre Dame have agreed to the deal that will start in 2026 and obviously would take it to a 14-team field with the guarantees for conference champions. Says that the format is not done as of yet, and obviously the Big Ten and the SEC are going to have a lot of stake on that, but whatever the financial terms were, whatever they needed to get worked out on that front to get the deal done with ESPN, apparently they have gotten that done. I think sources indicate a strong preference for a 14-team field that would include the 5 highest-ranked conference champions and the next 9 highest-ranked teams. So that may be a strong preference. We'll see whether or not strong preference translates into how it actually looks when it's time to do it. But it sounds like maybe instead of the guaranteed bids for the SEC and the Big Ten, that the conferences maybe will say, okay, you didn't want to take your second guaranteed bid, ACC. Who knows? We might wind up getting 4 or 5 bids in this thing, potentially, depending on how the rankings go. So, again, we don't know what the final format's going to look like, but the deal to get it done, at least apparently, has been worked out here.
If you're the AAC, you have to get that other bid, don't you?
I mean, you would think, although I will say, Mountain West.
I'm saying like almost as a directive, like, guys, we have to get this bid.
Yeah, Mountain West is going to put up a fight too, but I would think most of the time the American's going to get it.
Yeah, because one's getting weaker and one's getting a little stronger, it seems. All right, that's the deal coming down. We thought that it may happen during the show, and that it has happened. We still don't have a structure. It happened exactly how we said. Don't have a structure, but they appear to have worked out the financial parts, which means you can go ahead with the signature.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
The Fan is ready for Brave season. Are you?
3-1 smoked high in the air, deep center field, and heading for the horizon. A home run by Olsen.
We're streaming every game of the Braves 2024 season free on the 680 The Fan app.
So make sure you download it now and don't miss a pitch of the Braves this season. Now back to Southern Sports Today and the Chuck Oliver Show.
Listed, folks, said LSU's got plans 4 or 5 years down the road to replace the Pete Maravich Assembly Center. It's about a revenue source. That's all that is. Suites and ability to host bigger. Like right now, we had John Denver and Elvis played here. It's like not really the brag you think it is anymore. That just tells me it's a really old, old building. So they're trying to get a new one. My question is, though, do facilities matter to the players anymore? As long as they're functional and fine, do the facilities really sell? I don't know that they do, and we've seen some places actually pause on development on some of that. We're going to talk on-field as well, I promise, but big picture, it's galore today because we've got a new playoff financial structure set. We're going to cover everything from On3, the National College Football columnist. Welcome back, Jesse Simonton. How's your Friday, friend?
Doing all right, Chuck. Doing all right. Thanks for having me.
Let's first of all talk just in general the idea that we used to upgrade facilities to help in recruiting, and I was mentioning LSU. They're doing that for revenue, not to help recruiting. Tell me what you think, your personal opinion about where kids are going and choosing, and what's important to either a recruit or somebody in the portal today. Is it facilities? Because that was always the go-to.
It was always the go-to, Chuck, and I do think that the facilities are certainly important, but I do think their heightened in importance is maybe going to lessen once these players, you know, get a share of the pie. Once some of that revenue is not going to the facilities anymore because they had to spend the money on something, and they're actually going to have to pay the labor that is funding those facilities. So the shiny toys, when you'll hear folks talk about it. I mean, the facilities in some of these SEC schools, Big Ten schools, they're nicer than what these guys are going to in the NFL. In some circumstances. So the shiny new toys, the waterfalls and that kind of stuff, I think that's, you know, the days of the past. But you still, you know, these coaches, these administrators, they want these big football-only standalone deals where your guys really have everything in the control, from the, academics to where you eat, to where you, you know, get to hang out. And then obviously you have your meetings and practices. So that stuff's not going to go away. But I do think that kind of maybe the shiny toys of some of the deals within the facilities are kind of a days of the past.
Okay. I think it was Woody Allen, his quote, 90% of success is just showing up. Like, just show up every day. Something may happen. Mississippi State, as a for instance, Arkansas, as a for instance, just showing up as an SEC program, the new TV deal for the 3:30 formerly CBS game, every SEC program gets an additional $19 million, an additional 19. The new CFP financial arrangement, just by being in the SEC, you're going from $5.5 million to, is it $21 million per school? Talk about the widening gap and Florida State getting angrier and angrier.
Yeah, I mean, with the deal that's come out today, I mean, this is just the SEC and the Big Ten, you know, those two conferences, the power two now. I mean, they just continue to kind of flex their financial dominance. They have the best media rights deal already. And then as you just noted, now they're, you know, being able to kind of plunder the college football playoff as well. I mean, they're going to get double the revenue essentially of the ACC, which is why Florida State, you know, is really – you know, belly aching and raising hell about trying to get out of that conference. Clemson, Miami, you know, North Carolina, I think would follow suit. Now where they land is still TBD, but that's why, you know, the SEC, that's why Tony, you know, Greg Sankey and Tony Petitti are kind of dictating the future of the sport. I mean, everything's kind of codifying around them. They have consolidated the most money, the most power, the most control. And they're going to dictate what the future of the sport looks like. They could have taken their ball and gone home, you know, if they wanted to. I think that was reportedly out there with the college football playoff contract, but they did at least, you know, codify a deal that for now protects the ACC, Big 12, and one group of five. But what does that look like if there's more realignment? And, you know, there's a clause within the contract that says, hey, we can rip this thing up. And so, again, they control the future. The Arkansas and the Missouris and the Mississippi States, right now they get a fat check, and you know that's great for them because there's a lot of schools, the Oklahoma States, the Baylors, the TCUs, that would love to be getting a similar sort of deal.
All right, in a very simplistic, streamlined version, I don't know, about a month and a half, 2 months ago, the NCAA went palms up to Virginia and Tennessee, and they was like, all right, fine, pay them, we don't care. Did they go palms up this week as far as transfer waivers? Fine, everybody, just whatever, transfer, we don't care. Like, what are they in charge of now?
Well, it, you know, they're having a hard time, you know, really, you know, I think overseeing anything because you keep showing up to court and you keep losing. And so how much power do they actually have to wield? It seems like, again, less and less by the day as these other, you know, conferences are pushing back, that the Greg Sankeys and the Tony Petitis of the world seems like they have as much power as Charlie Baker, the NCAA president, mm-hmm. at this point. So you keep losing in court. It makes it hard to, you know, really rubber stamp the rules or regulations that you still have, supposedly have around your sport.
Okay. Run game coordinators, running backs, coaches, there are some positions where we look at it, we probably unfairly limit the guy, but we go, oh, yeah, he's a recruiter, and so we don't get too jazzed or concerned about losing or gaining a running back coach or a wide receiver coach. Tony Alford, this is news. Talk about what Michigan gets and talk about what Ohio State loses.
Yeah, I have a column on this at On3. You guys can go check out. I just think it's fascinating layers because, you know, not the timing of it's very interesting. Ohio State's already in, you know, is a week and a half or so into spring practice. And you lose a guy who's been, you know, championing the hated the team up north blood for the last 9 years, worked for Urban Meyer, has been on Ryan Day's staff since the beginning, and now he, you know, jumps ship and goes and joins Sherrone Moore's inaugural staff. And he leaves behind, Chuck, you know, probably the best running back room in America with Trevion Henderson, Quinshon Judkins, the transfer from Ole Miss, Dallin Hayden, a blue-chip prospect that has, you know, shown well the last two seasons. So it's just – it's a very interesting deal that, you know, someone – that Alford would make that move, that he's replacing a guy in Mike Hart, who's the all-time leading rusher at Michigan, who was not retained by Sherrone Moore. Just a lot of interesting layers there.
All right, let's go old school, as if this interview happened before Portal and name, image, likeness. Preview the season. Is Clemson moving back closer towards what Dabo swears they are, or are they kind of solidifying their above average, almost really good status, the 9-ish win, 10-win area?
I'm going to take the latter for 100, Chuck. I just think, you know, when you look at Dabo, certainly is confident that his program is going to be back, but back as in a championship contender on an annual basis. Yep. I'm skeptical. Let's take a look. You know, I have another piece at On3. Early lines are out. FanDuel's released a bunch of early lines. Clemson's almost a 2-touchdown underdog. I think it's like 12.5 or 13 to Georgia in the opener. If you know, the Tigers were seen by others as a likely college football playoff contender, that line's a lot shorter. And so when you're looking at a 13-point spread, they still have major offensive line concerns. We still don't know what we're going to get out of Cade Klubnik on a, you know, week-by-week basis. Where are the wide receivers? I like what Clemson's done defensively, but that hadn't been the issue the last couple of years. It's been what, you know, it's been an offense that's just been kind of rudderless, and I'm not sure thus far we have not seen any indications that has changed.
Last thing for you, and go as far south as you can in the ACC. Miami and Mario, new quarterback, same coordinators. That's good for him, I guess. What's it going to be on the field this year?
I think this is, you know, this has got to be a make or break season for the Hurricanes. I mean, you return a really nice, you know, unlike Clemson, Miami has a lot of weapons at wide receiver. I do think they probably need to get another tailback out of the transfer portal because Mark Fletcher, their promising freshman, he's still beat up there, still battling, I think, that kind of Achilles foot. But you have a lot of defensive talent. Mario has restocked the offensive and defensive lines. Does he have his quarterback in Cam Ward? I think he does. It's really about what Mario does, you know, on Saturdays. I think that what, you know, that's kind of held him back, both at Oregon and at Miami. You know, he has no problem accumulating talent from basically December all the way to August. It's about what happens between August and November on those, you know, every Saturday. So if he can be less conservative, if he can kind of get out of his own way, I think the Hurricanes could absolutely contend for the ACC this year.
Does it in a big way for On3. It's Jesse Simonton. I appreciate your time. Thank you, sir.
Thanks, Chuck.
All right. Always fun talking college football, Jesse. And so many big picture things going on middle of March. The playoff finances have been hashed out. This is the projected revenue. And so here are the percentages. And if the revenue was more than this, then we'll just adjust the percentages. You know, everybody will get their share of that, you know, more. So, but this is their share. This is not, shares don't have to be equal. And as everyone outside of the Big Ten and the SEC is finding out, some of us are created more equal than others. That is the literary takeaway going on in college football right now and all of college athletics. So we're going to take a break. We'll come back, wrap up on this Friday next.
Always college football time in the South. Now back to more of the King of College Football, Chuck Oliver, on Southern Sports Today.
Syracuse has a huge alumni base throughout the country. When you're able to really set them up for life after football, because everyone's not going to go to the NFL. So when they know guarantee, because Coach Fran and everyone's trying to start Syracuse 60, which is within 60 days after you graduate, you'll have a job in the field that you want to work in because of our alumni.
Fran Brown dealing out all kinds of incredibly valuable offers based around Syracuse football and based around the Syracuse alumni base and taking care of our own. And appeals to me. I'm a grown man in his 50s, and I'm listening, and I'm thinking, okay, makes sense. All right, strong for the future. Okay, good long-range vision. Do you know what a 17-year-old high school senior is not real deep on? Long-range vision. Character, integrity. And I'm not saying, like, you know, hammering on kids. I'm saying at 17, you're supposed to be about silly dalliances. You're supposed to be. I told you, I was a good kid, and I was boring. I rock in a mullet. Like, we don't make great decisions. Hopefully, they're just about how you wear your hair and drive the car. So it just, that's a, I'm listening to all of it. I'm eating it all up, man. I like all of that. I don't know how that plays with the four-star you're trying to keep from flipping to Penn State. Like, you got on him, you evaluated, and now he's a four-star and Penn State's sniffing around and James Franklin is going to get him. So that's a pitch that appeals to me. He's not recruiting me. I think he's recruiting somebody who was more about literally right like a snake. Do you know what a snake is? And I mean this just from a physical ability sort of thing. Snakes only see, like, I don't know, like 6 feet in front of them. When you're 17, how about this? When you're 17 and you have started to hear, or now for maybe several years, you've heard, man, whiff, yourself. Woo, you smell good. You're the best thing going. You're the five-star. You're the living in. You're the sunrise. You're the everything. Then by the time you're 17, you're looking around going, long-range future, that's for other people. Not make the NFL, that's for other people. Me, I know what's ahead. When you've heard that for a little bit or a long while, and then somebody tells you a completely different, because the pitch has changed. That was the pitch. If you go back, pre-name, image, likeness, portal, etc. It was the only pitch. Can't do anything for you now, not really. But when you graduate, we'll be there. Absolutely. So, Fran Brown, and everything he's saying has a lot of value. I don't know how the message will be received, but it's a great message. I was mentioning earlier women's hoops. If you hadn't been watching, there's like record-setting stuff going on, and just really fun, competitive, interesting games and conferences and individuals and coaches, if you start looking at the sidelines a little bit, and overall big storylines. And that's the real takeaway here. Record-setting viewership for women's college basketball is the latest example of what's true at any level. Now, when I'm referencing record-setting viewership, according to ESPN, 2 million folks watched LSU play South Carolina for the SEC championship, 126% increase from last year. ACC title game between Notre Dame and NC State, 1.4, it's a 462% increase if you care. Now, probably shouldn't have been as low as it was, and so now there's a big bump, big spike. The nightcap Pac-12 championship between USC women and Stanford women, the women's game, 679,000 viewers. Now, the Big Ten championship, the Iowa-Nebraska thing, that became the most watched women's conference tournament game in the history of women's conference tournament games. An average of 3 million viewers tuning in. So the when I say the trickle down, people got kind of caught in to the sport, maybe the attention from Iowa and LSU last year. And then the First Lady got involved and there's all kinds of stuff. And then it went off the court. It went to fashion. It went to mainstream media. It went to endorsements. It went to just gin pop. And then the season started again, and then Caitlin Clark started doing her thing, and folks who were consuming all the Iowa Caitlin Clark they could get, well, after that had been consumed, you're like, well, I would like some more. All right, LSU South Carolina, that'll do. And then some folks said, I would like even more. So that night, when I said 679,000 viewers, I don't know this for a fact. I'm going to guess there are days that they're really expensive argument show that is on like the big channel of Fox. Like, I bet you the daytime argument channel, argument show at ESPN. I don't know what kind of ratings Pat McAfee does. But there are thought out, staffed, budgeted, kind of big time approaches to TV on the biggest sports channels there are. I bet you there are days they don't get 680,000 people watching. And I think USC and Stanford, that crowd was people who said, wow, I wanted the big thing, the headliner. And then I like that, so I wanted some more. And now I'm kind of drilling down. And I think I just kind of like the sport. Here is the truth, folks. When I said that record-setting viewership for women's college hoops, latest example of what's true at any level, folks who have never watched much, if any, women's college hoops now can't get enough of it in a lot of cases. Hashtag Caitlin and Angel. If a human being watches three games of any team, any sport, by the end of the third game, you're invested. And I mean like as a fan. You have gotten to know the players and coaches and rivals and three games. The context of the season, who the bad guy is, who the official you don't want. Oh, he doesn't like us. You're officially in as a fan. Three games. It's true for the Arena League. It's true for Little League. It's true for the Slap League. You watch three games, and you start to know the players, the participants, and the stories. It can be fourth grade baseball. You're in after three games. And so that's what's going on with the women's hoops right now. What's up, Heath?
So while I was in New York, as you noted, I was up in NYC the last 3 days at the Barrett Summit there. So while I was off doing media stuff, we had the Trev Alberts departure from Nebraska as AD to Texas A&M. And I know you talked about that while I'm gone, so I don't want to get into that too much. But yesterday, the governor of the state of Nebraska came out and went after the board for the fact that they're responsible for Trev Alberts leaving. Now, keep in mind, this is the same board that had literally just granted Trev Alberts yep. a long-term contract with Nebraska and an extension for plenty of money. But he's saying, well, you didn't get a president in place quick enough to keep the athletics director comfortable with what the leadership was, and that's why he took this job and that's why he left. I don't want to get into the specifics of Nebraska politics, but Chuck, there's a famous line, and this did happen. The person who said it thought that he was being ironic, but it was not taken that way. He was making the argument for more funding for Oklahoma's actual university, and he said, gentlemen, we want to have a university our football team can be proud of, and that's basically what the governor is saying here, is that why didn't you rush getting the president of this place hired? If not for that, we could have kept Trev Alberts as AD. And by the way, man, Trev has really killed it as AD so far with the performance of the football program. Now, to be fair, again, Matt Rhule may figure it out. But the idea that losing Trev Alberts as AD, that's the problem. Not the fact that, I don't know, maybe you need to really be careful in hiring the right person in a challenging time for everybody involved in academics to lead a major university like that. No, no, no. We need to hurry it up. Trev's getting antsy. I mean, I don't know, man. It just blows my mind sometimes. Yeah, we love this sport, but there are other things in the world that matter.
Fundraising is always a huge deal, even huger now. And so I don't know all the ins and outs of Trev Alberts. I looked at it, saw Nebraska's getting $4.1 million from I was like, all right, looks like a deal for Nebraska. We can go find a new AD.
You basically pay for the AD job for like 2 years with what you're getting for Trev to leave.
David, fantastic week. Heath, fantastic day. Welcome back. Glad you're here. Everybody who came for College Football Conversation, the guests, the listeners, everybody, thank y'all. Appreciate it. We're going to take 2 days off. We're going to recharge those batteries. And I promise you, come back on Monday, recharge and ready for more. Chuck Oliver Show.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
Hey Atlanta, Hudson Mason here. Is a new roof still on your to-do list, but you've been delayed due to rising home service costs? Well, here's a fantastic solution from Accent Roofing Service. Zero down, zero payments, and zero interest for a full year. That's right, you can get your new roof now and start paying next year. Act quickly because Accent's incredible offer of 000 with a 12-month deferred payment option for a lifetime roof system isn't going to last long. Contact the craftsman at Accent Roofing Service today, accentroofingservice.com.